Members, the committee, the chair will call the Committee on Public Safety, Criminal Justice, Reform and Finance Policy Division to order. There is a quorum, and someone asked Representative Edelson if she would be so kind as to move the minutes of March 14th.
So moved, Chair.
Very well. Any discussion? All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails, and our minutes of March 14th are adopted. Members, we have five bills to move through today, and hopefully we can get it done within the time that we're allotted. My apologies for coming late. I was detained a bit in my office with some advocates on a policy issue that I'm working on. First up is Chair Lesch, House File 1909. Chair Lesch, I believe your motion is to move House File 1909 to refer to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Whatever you say, Mr. Chair.
Ways and Means.
Ways and Means it is.
Very well. Motion is before us, and House File 1909 is before us. So, Chairman Lesch.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if I may, I'd ask Mr. Carlson to explain the details of the bill for you all.
Very well. And Chairman Lesch, I've been notified you've got some author's amendments. Do you want to do those now? Or? Yeah,
it's yes. Technical, but yes,
if we can.
Very well.
Sure.
There is an A1 amendment. Actually, are there two A1? That's it, right? That's two. Chairman Lesch moves adoption of the A1 amendment. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. House File 1909 is before us as amended. Chairman Lesch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Joel Carlson. I own a government affairs business here in St. Paul, and I'm here on behalf of the Wine and Spirit Wholesalers Association of Minnesota. And the bill before you, 1909, is an effort to put a regulatory structure in place for shipments of wine into Minnesota. We have worked for almost 2 years with all of the stakeholders to get the bill in the shape that it's in today, and we have agreement with the Wine Institute, the retailers, the wholesalers, and we've worked with AGED and the Revenue Department to get this legislation in front of you. The issues that are principally related to the Department of Public Safety are sections 5 through 9 of the bill. Section 5 deals with the alcohol enforcement account, which is conforming language, as is Section 6. The real meat of the bill, Mr. Chair and members, is Sections 8 and 9. And Sections 8 requires, as most states do, we are one of the few that don't require a licensing for people shipping alcohol into, specifically wine, into the state of Minnesota. This sets up a licensing scheme for people that will ship wine into Minnesota. And Section 9 of the bill is an obligation that is common across the country for common carriers to report their shipments of alcohol. There's both a public safety reason for doing that, but also a tax reason. I didn't go over the tax portions of the bill, but one of the reasons the bill is before you, Mr. Chair and members, is that by statute, wine that is shipped into Minnesota comes in tax-free. And with the decision on Wayfair and with so much more product being shipped across the country, I'm unaware of any other state that doesn't tax the product that comes in. So sections 2 of the 3 and 4 of the bill deal with the tax issue, which Chairman Markert will address that in his committee. So I'm happy to answer questions about the bill. I'm not aware of any opposition. There was an amendment, Mr. Chair, on the fee that didn't get submitted. We got it in at 12:42, but it evidently needed to be in at 12. So I thought we missed it by 3 minutes, but we were almost 45 minutes late. But we have agreement with the Wine Institute to increase the fee to $100. I think AGED thinks their cost might be a little bit higher, and we're working out those numbers now, and they can speak to that themselves. I think they're here. I'd be happy to answer any questions, and we'd appreciate your support moving this back to Ways and Means.
Very well. There is a question from Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Quick question. How will this apply to my farm wineries that are bottling their wine?
Mr. Chairman and members, it will actually bring parity with your farm wineries because they pay tax and all the state wineries do not.
Okay, good. We like that then.
Representative, yes. Representative Lucetto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, can you tell us how
many bottles of wine are in a case? And then did I understand you correctly? Could you confirm what, if I heard you correctly, present law allows for two cases to be shipped from out-of-state wineries to Minnesotans tax-free, but this would change it so that it would increase the number of cases beyond two, but then all of it would be a taxable sale. Is that correct?
Correct.
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Lucero, working on a 12-bottle case, and it's specified in statute how many liters that has to work out to, but all of that would come in taxable now. And in working with industry, both ours and the wine industry, changing the law and requiring registration and all of the regulatory hurdles for two cases per consumer per year didn't work. And we agreed among industry that we didn't want to remove all restrictions, but we agreed that 12 would be an appropriate number. And even at 12, we are on the low end of what states allow to be shipped into their states. 12 is on the low end. There are six states that are unlimited, and the average is 24.
Very well. Representative Lee Johnson.
Chair Mariani, Representative Lesh, I know you're not doing the amendment today, but I do have a suggestion for your amendment. That on line 7.1, you probably need to change that recipient there as well.
7.1. Can you speak into the microphone?
Chair Lesh, you didn't hear the question.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the question.
On the amendment that's not being offered that you plan to offer later, this one was adopted?
That one was adopted.
Okay, my mistake. You brought also on line 7.1 to on the bill, it has a recipient as well. That probably needs to be changed.
Mr. Carlson, does that make sense?
Yes, and we can note that. I know if we're successful, Mr. Chairman, the portion of the bill, sections 5 through 9, will be carried in your omnibus bill, and we can correct that at that time.
Thank you. Lee Johnson, Representative, or Chair Considine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Lesh, I like this bill. I have several wineries in my immediate area, and it'll bring parity as far as the taxes go. But I also have a constituent that's been talking to me for about a year now. She has a specific wine in California that's organic that basically she can drink, and now she, as it sits, she can get two cases a year. So it will open up her to be able to get a lot more of the wine that she particularly likes and doesn't cause allergies for. So thank you for bringing this forward.
Thank you. Very well. Is there anyone else that wishes to testify on this bill? Please come forward, sir. And meanwhile, Representative Grosso has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Lesh, I see you deleted Section 10 in there. Does this deletion in Section 10 any amendment to allow for bootlegging to be legal in Minnesota now?
I can answer.
Chairman Lesh, Mr. Carlson.
Defer to counsel on that.
Mr. Chairman and members,
Capone.
That's not the intent. It was determined after this was drafted that we already have sufficient law in Minnesota that prevents the illegal shipment of alcohol into Minnesota. And when we met with the tax chairman and found out his grandfather was in Leavenworth as being a bootlegger, we decided that it would be better to take this out.
And Ms. Chair, Representative Russell, I believe the preferred nomenclature is not bootlegging, but running molasses.
Running molasses. Okay. Thank you.
So for the record, we're not getting rid of bootlegging prohibitions in the state of Minnesota. Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. My name is Bob Hawkins, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Public Safety, and I want to thank you and the members of the committee to have an opportunity to speak today, sir. We just want to talk about, if the bill is successful, what the impact would be for alcohol and gambling enforcement. Please. And we had a superstar testifier lined up for you, Mr. Chair, Carla Sincotta, our Director of Alcohol and Gambling. Unfortunately, she's at home with a medical issue. So I'm going to do the best I can, sir, and I also have Mike McManus, the Alcohol Regulatory Administrator, with me as well, just to provide some information and then certainly answer any questions that you may have, sir. If House File 1909 is successful, the impact for alcohol and gambling would be we'd have to add a new license type to records management system, create application form for submittal to AGED, receive and review application for completeness, data entry for application license fee, daily deposits, compare federal permit against application, confirm sales tax, tax license with Department of Revenue, confirm sales tax are current with Department of Revenue, follow up financial issuance, and then do this on an annual basis. Regulatory compliance review, receive complaints and complete regulatory investigations, and also direct shipper consent to Minnesota law. Look at sales without license prohibited investigations, and then finally receive and reconcile quarterly reports, annual reports, verify shipments against state statute limits, and do the data entry to confirm compliance with restrictions. And one of the things, Mr. Chair, that Director Sincotta did, she took a very conservative approach, taking a look at the fees that would help offset these costs. And what she did is she took a look at all the states across the country. There's 34 currently that do it, require an annual permit or a license year cycle. Of those, the average is $234 for those fees. Director Sincotta actually broke it down even further, being more conservative, and tried to make it a little bit more apples-to-apples comparison. She took a look at the states that surround us. She took a look at Illinois, Iowa, Michigan, Nebraska, North Dakota, South Dakota, and Wisconsin. And their annual fee averaged $189. What the director is recommending is $170, even more conservative, to help offset those costs. So we're taking a very conservative approach, Mr. Chair, and the bottom line for us is it's going to take, when you go through all the work that's going to be required, it comes down to 2.25 FTEs. We're just rounding that down to 2. Get you the actual titles for those FTEs. One's an OSI, which is an administrative position, and the other one's the LCIS, which is the investigatory position for alcohol. And so rounding that down to 2, Mr. Chair, and that's just what we'll need to be able to make this happen if this bill is successful, sir.
Very well. Thank you, Assistant Commissioner Hawkins. I have a question for you then, Mr. Carlson. So there is a amendment that will be coming later for a $100 fee. I take it that is in acknowledgement and reflecting what the Assistant Commissioner just shared in terms of what it will cost the state of Minnesota to properly regulate and monitor these transactions. So I guess my question is, given that it sounds like the $100 fee is not going to cover the costs of the state, based on the testimony, what is your predisposition relative to raising that fee from the $100 that we currently have in the amendment?
And Mr. Chairman, I've had a lot of conversations with the department about this particular issue and the entire bill, and I will say this: we want to do everything to make sure we cover the department's costs. I have agreement with my partners in the industry on 100. I haven't quite got them up to that excursion to 170 yet, but it's a work in progress. And I say that for 2 reasons. Number one, while I appreciate the department's cost, part of the assumptions that go into the fiscal note include the number of people that were registered. The department estimates that about 1,050 outstate wineries will register to ship into Minnesota. If you take the average number of wineries that we're basing the license fee off of, that number would be about 1,375. And so we're just negotiating over what these assumptions are, but we're going to do what we need to do to cover the department's costs.
Very well. Well, members, I do want everyone to know that the intent here is for us and our omnibus bill to carry the fee on this. And so those negotiations will also happen at this table as well. And so that's how we'll proceed with that. So, Assistant Commissioner, you have either further comments or you have someone else you wish to offer testimony as well?
No, sir, Mr. Chair. We just stand for questions, but we're nothing more to offer at this time.
Very well. Representative Seto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the commissioner, could you, for the you rounded down from the 2.5 to the two FTEs, all in with salary and then with benefits, could you have a rough estimation on what that costs? Is it 50,000 a year, 60,000, whatever? And then part two, under current law, the two cases times 12, so 24 bottles per year that is under present law, are you aware of any problems that have happened with the lack of licensing or regulation?
Assistant Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the first half of that question, what I can give you, and I will certainly get the information, all of it for you, sir, but just roughly, the salary alone for the administrative position is $33,280 without the benefits. For the liquor control investigative specialist, just the salary alone, it's approximately $37,440 without the benefits. Obviously, that'll bump it up a little bit. And Mr. Chair, could have Mr. McManus come up to the microphone for the second half of that question.
Certainly. Welcome,
thank you,
Mr. McManus.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mike McManus. I'm a supervisor of the regulatory enforcement section, the alcohol agents. And I believe the second half of the question was, have we had any issues with the current regulation? Currently, under the provisions of Minnesota Statute 348.417, the sale, it's not deemed a sale in Minnesota, and there's no tax collected, and there's no license required. So, no, we haven't had any issues, but the law really doesn't have any violations at present time for us to enforce.
So, Mr. Chair, and I would just put forward to the bill author, perhaps to avoid everything that we just heard that would have to happen with the license regulation, perhaps the bill author might consider a friendly amendment in the future of just increasing the limit from 2 to 6 or 12 without having to do anything else. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Lucero. Lee Johnson? Oh, I'm sorry, did someone want to offer? Mr.
Carlson. Mr. Chairman and Representative Lucero, I appreciate that, and I don't have to chase every single rabbit, but you need to know that the product that is shipped into Minnesota, which is unregulated right now, we have no idea how much is coming in. But it comes in tax-free, which is a competitive disadvantage to your local liquor stores, to your local wholesalers, to your homegrown businesses. And that is part of the reason that we're here, which we haven't spent any time on. But that liquor, just increasing it to 12, just increases the competitive disadvantage. So I didn't want to let that go unnoted.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Lee Johnson.
Chair Mariani, listening to the testimony from the commissioner, it sounds like there is some fiscal implications on this besides also two FTEs. I'm just wondering if there's been a fiscal note requested. If not, we should probably do that.
Absolutely. I wonder if Mr. Walls can share any information relative to that.
Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson, I had not anticipated a fiscal cost, and I was not contacted by the department, so I just put in a note request 2 minutes ago here at the table.
And Mr. Chairman and members, prior to kind of a sudden illness, Director Sincott and I have been emailing for back and forth frequently to get to that fiscal note. I know most of her work on that note is done.
Assistant Commissioner, and obviously we'll get into this more, when we mark up the finance elements of our omnibus bill, but do you, outside of the regulatory expenses or costs as you identified, do you anticipate other implications relative to the fiscal cost impact on the department? Or
Mr.
elsewhere, for that matter?
Mr. Chair, in regards to the financial aspect of it, no, sir.
Okay. All right. Very well. We will be continuing this conversation then. Is there anyone else that wishes to testify? Any further questions? Very well, then. Chairman Lesch renews his motion that House File 1909, as amended, be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Thank you, Representative Lesch. Is Representative Joaquin here? Joaquin? All right. Representative Joaquin.
It's going to
Chair, I make a motion to have House File 1568 move to the General Register.
Very well. Representative Joachim, your bill is formally before us, and I believe you have an author's amendment as well.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
And, Chair Mariani?
Yes.
On that author's amendment, I do move to split the amendment so both Section 3 and 4 could be discussed separately.
Okay, very well. Let's do this. So let's have, you want to move to split the amendment. Let's have the amendment before us. Is the maker of the motion, can Representative Edelson move the A3 amendment?
It's so moved, Chair.
All right, so the amendment is before us, and Representative Johnson moves to divide the amendment, and I'm going to ask House Research to just formally go through that that motion for us. I don't know. Well, let's find out.
Mr. Chair and members, the motion would be to divide the A3 amendment, which would create two separate provisions, page 2, delete section 3, and then page 2, delete section 4.
And to our researchers, is this a dividable amendment?
Mr. Chair and members, under Rule 10 of this committee's rules, that decision is up to the chair. However, under Rule 3, I can advise Rule 3 of the standing rules of the House, a member may request the division of a question that contains more than one separate and distinct point. And these two sections are not interdependent on one another.
So, to our research, and so when you say not interdependent, that they are separate and distinct points?
Mr. Chair, members, that would be correct. It would be possible to delete Section 3 and leave Section 4, or delete Section 4 and leave Section 3 without any other changes to the bill.
Mr. Chair?
Chairwoman Joachim.
I was wondering if I could just have a brief opportunity to explain why the amendment's before us.
Chair Lead, Lead Johnson, my desire would be for me and the members to understand what we're dealing with. So I would like to have that, and then we'll move to your motion. Chairwoman Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What we have before us in Amendment A3 is an unfortunate clerical error. I have copies of the minutes, and they've been posted online. When the bill moved out of committee, both the amendments that you see before you in Sections 3 and 4 were defeated, one on a roll call vote and one on a voice vote. When the bill was processed out of committee, the final roll call vote, which was 17-0, was actually attached to the second amendment. So this was a clerical error. The Transportation Committee clearly voted to send this bill out clean, and I would prefer to keep it that way. We're just trying to fix a clerical error here.
And Chairwoman Joachim, do the minutes of the committee reflect that?
A3 amendment reflects that, taking out the amendment that was accidentally engrossed due to a clerical error. It was not the will of the committee.
So then to our lead, Johnson, my advice, quite frankly, would be for you to remove your amendment to the amendment, because we would then be acting on something that actually is not before us. I'll look for counsel here for sure. This is an unusual situation. Representative Johnson.
Chair Mariani, it might have been a clerical error coming out of committee, but every member of the House voted on this. This went to the House floor for adoption of the report, and there was no motions or any corrections on that, and so basically the entire House voted on it.
All right. Well, Representative Johnson, this is an unusual situation. I'm going to allow your amendment to the amendment. My advice to members, consistent with testimony of Chairwoman Joachim and the correctly recorded minutes of the prior committee, is that we ultimately adopt the intent of the original amendment. Right, absolutely, yeah. Do you want to speak to your amendment?
Chair Mariani, members, Section 3 of the bill that the entire House approved as a requirement of cameras to record the operator and the interior of the train and the areas of the operator. There was a horrific crash that was impetus for this bill and was the result of a light rail driver who blew through a horizontal bar that required the operator to stop. We need to make sure that there is video recording of every light rail transit driver to ensure if there is a crash, we can know whether the driver was distracted by cell phone or some other item. Our transit buses are all equipped with this recording equipment of the driver. And this was added in Transportation Committee and was adopted by the full body on March 4th.
So you're okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Johnson, I appreciate that. We did have a discussion in Transportation Committee on this. This unfortunate accident not only brought to light the loophole in our laws that LRT were not, the definition was not in vehicle, so we couldn't do the reckless driving conviction that that you'll hear about from our testifiers. But there are other things we want to look at. And I have a commitment, and I made a commitment to look at that next year. My hope really is for the family, for this bill to move clean. It is clean on the floor in the Senate with no amendments attached so that we can get something done immediately. So if this happens to somebody else, at least charges can be brought forward. By cluttering up this bill and doing stuff that can be done at another time, I worry about us being able to finish this and have this have this bill be here to help other people.
Chairwoman Joachim and Lee Johnson and committee members, I'm going to provide a little bit of latitude here, but quite frankly, this issue I don't believe is before this committee. The conversation was held in front of another committee. The author has testified a typographical error that exists before us. If we want to have this debate, the proper way to have had it, Lee Johnson, was to introduce an amendment on time to reintroduce the Section 3. That probably would have been difficult if you're tracking the error, so I get that, in terms of, you know, what was recorded. So that's why I'm providing a little bit of latitude here, members. But members, I do not want us to re-debate what was debated in the prior committee relative to this. Representative Johnson.
Chair Mariani. There was no need for us to enter an amendment to put it into the bill because it's already there. And it was approved by the entire body of the House of Representatives. I think it's important that we actually get all the facts as to what happens with these horrible incidences, and this will help with the investigation of that. That's why I feel it's important to be there, and I would ask for a roll call.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Joachim.
Since Representative Johnson brought up the investigation, I thought I'd add that there has been an investigation. There was a camera on the light. We know what happened. The driver was found at fault of the LRT was found at fault. The only reason why it couldn't go to court was what we're trying to fix in the underlying bill, and that's to make sure an LRT driver can be charged with reckless driving.
Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll admit to feeling some real frustration with this. So we have a situation where Lee Johnson, it is true that, in fact, these could have been offers amendments, but if they'd been brought in this committee, we would have said, you know, we don't have expertise about standards for light rail, et cetera. That'd be properly vetted in the Transportation Committee, which did vet it and rejected it and said, no, so it's not true that it passed in transportation. It actually failed in transportation. There was a clerical error, and the fact that then it's moved on to us through the floor, to my mind, is frankly irrelevant. The Transportation Committee, which has expertise on both of these issues, has expressly said no. And I don't. I feel some frustration here that to the extent that advantage may be taken of a clerical error. Again, the amendment could have been offered. It's true, and I understand why maybe it wouldn't have been. But of course, if it had been offered, we would have even more reason to reject it because we don't have the expertise in this area. It's the Transportation Committee that does, and they've already said no. So I would urge members to reject this on both the substance and also the process. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Very well. Officer Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just have a question. So when I'm looking at the amendment, it says page 2, delete sections 3 and 4. So when I look at sections 3 and 4, section 4 in its entirety is new language, whereas section 3 is existing law and new language. So is it my understanding from the reading of the amendment that it would delete the entirety of section 3, which would include the deletion of existing laws?
Representative Lucero, this is exactly what happens when we have clerical errors. Chairwoman Youakim, if you can explain this.
Mr. Chair, this was always something really hard for me to wrap around my mind around, too, even though I worked here for 8 years as staff beforehand. When you're deleting a section that has underlying new language, you're just deleting the underlying new language. You're not deleting the existing language. But it can be confusing because I've made that same mistake.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I don't remember voting on this bill on the floor. So I know we voted to approve committee reports in moving bills, but I don't think that's the same thing. I would just say for the sake of time, because I think we can move through this quickly, that we divide Section 3 and Section 4, and we will just vote to remove them. It seems to be the easiest way to go, and we can be done with this in a couple minutes.
And Representative Dean, that is what is before us then.
Mr. Chair, the amendment to the amendment, I understand, though, is to keep Section 3 in. I just wanted to be clear so people know what we're voting on.
I'm going to ask our House Research to repeat the motion before us.
Mr. Chair, members, there's no amendment to this amendment, to be clear. This has been a divided amendment.
I'm sorry.
Yes. So there will be two votes if you take it to a vote. The first vote will be to delete Section 3. The second vote would be to delete Section 4.
Very well. Let's say, Johnson, last word, then we're going to vote.
Chair Mariani, Representative Pinto brought up the fact that this doesn't belong in our purview. It belongs in transportation. We had a bill the other day that a couple times we tried to get to public safety because it had public safety implications, but House File 50 never came here. It was the hands-free bill.
Members, a roll call has been called, and so Representative Johnson, which part of the amendment are you asking for? The
3 to start with.
So this would be to, I'm going to ask House Research to help me again with this. So we divided the amendment, and we're going to vote. Representative Johnson, you want to vote on the delete Section 3 component.
That's correct.
Is that correct? So I'm going to have House Research to just formally state that. I want to make sure I'm getting this right. I don't want to do clerical errors.
Like I know, please. I'm trying to track it as myself.
Got it.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. Essentially what you're voting on is page 2, delete Section 3.
All right, very well. Members, roll call being called. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Mariani?
Yes.
Christensen?
Yes.
Considine?
Yes.
Dean?
Yes.
Edelson?
Yes.
Grossel?
No.
Howard?
Yes.
Johnson?
No.
Lesh?
Aye.
Long?
Yes.
Lucero? Miller.
Mr. Chair, I you just lost me in what we're voting. Were we voting on the amendment to the amendment? You got rid of that part. Okay. Yes.
Well, hold on. Let's make sure everyone knows what we're doing. Representative Johnson moved to amend, or rather to divide the amendment.
The A3
amendment. We are voting on the first part of that division. To delete Section 3. Thank you.
Gotcha. So there is no amendment to the amendment?
No.
Okay. Yes.
Mueller.
Yes.
Nash. O'Neill. Pinto.
Yes.
Poston. Going back to the roll call. Lucero. Nash, O'Neill,
It's
no.
Correct.
Poston.
Motion prevailed.
I do the same thing.
It's a Thursday, Mr. Chair.
At a vote of 11 to 3, the motion prevails, so we've deleted Section 3. So then the second part of the divided amendment, Representative Johnson, is it your desire to move that as well?
Chair Mariani, it is. If okay, I'd like to describe my reasons for that.
Please.
In Section 4, it requires that the Met Council conduct a light rail safety feature study. The Green Line uses a Simmons S70 model train for the Green Line. They weigh about 100,000 pounds, of which is about 6,000 pounds less than the old Blue Line Bombardier models. So far, we've had 14 people die from collisions with light rail trains since the operation began. And many of the road crossings are not equipped with the stop arms, marking it a hazard for cars or pedestrians, and especially on that Green Line. And as the Met Council moves ahead with the Southwest Light Rail extension, I think it's important that safety features are included in these lines constructions and not after the fact.
Very well. Any further discussion?
Mr. Chair?
Chairwoman Joaquin.
Representative Johnson, I just want to assure you we talked about this in committee. Met Council came and testified in transportation. They have done a safety study, and they are committed to starting another one that they're in the process of figuring out how they're going to do it. So rest assured there will be safety studies coming up.
Well, Representative Johnson.
Judiciary, just yesterday, we put in statute that a study had to be done and plans put in place by a different board and a different committee or different department. That plan was supposed to be done by 2017. And we heard a bill that removed that section of statute and repealed it because the study was never done. I'd rather have it in statute, so if they don't do, the department doesn't do that, we have something to go after them on and question why they're not doing that. And with that, Chair Mariani, I'd like to request a roll call.
The roll call has been requested. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Mariani?
Yes.
Christensen? Considine?
Yes.
Dean?
Yes.
Edelson?
Yes.
Grossel?
No.
Johnson?
No.
Lesh? Brussels on here. I'm going to redo it. Something happened. That's okay with you.
The clerk will start the roll call over.
Chair Mariani?
Yes.
Christensen?
Yes.
Considine?
Yes.
Dean?
Yes.
Edelson?
Yes.
Grossel?
No.
Howard?
Yes.
Johnson?
No.
Lesh?
Aye.
Long?
Yes.
Lucero? Lucero? Miller?
Yes.
Moeller?
Yes.
Nash? Nash? O'Neill? O'Neill? Pinto?
Yes.
Poston. Going down the roll call again. Lucero. Nash. O'Neill. Poston. Okay. Motion prevailed with 11. 11-2.
11-2. Yeah. Very well. On a vote of 11 ayes and 2 nays, the motion prevails. And Section 4 is now deleted. But, Chairwoman Joaquin, please convey our committee's actions to correct the prior committee's error.
Thank you.
And members, that's really all you were voting on here today.
Was to be final bill?
No, I'm just talking about the amendment. And, you know, the prior committee made policy decisions that are now correctly captured in the minutes. They sent this bill in error, contrary to the actions of that committee, and this committee simply corrected what was sent to us to reflect the prior committee's careful deliberations and actions. Representative Joaquin, your bill is before us, and we're going to have to move really fast through it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know one of my testifiers had flown here in here today, so I'll be quick. I just really appreciate you adopting the A3 amendment. Get my thoughts collected here. House File 1568 is a bipartisan bill that would make a modest but important change to Minnesota's traffic code. The need for this change was made clear due to a tragic light rail accident that caused the death of 29-year-old Nick Westlake and severely injured his fiancée, Nellie Petkova. Nick's family and friends are here today. On their behalf, I ask the committee to support this legislation. Nick and Nellie were traveling in their car together and were crossing University on a green light. The light rail train traveling on University Avenue approached the intersection with a red traffic light and a light rail stop signal, a vertical white bar illuminated. The operator simply failed to stop. And Metro Transit video shows very clearly that both signals were telling him to do so. When he drove through the stop signals, the train struck Nick's car, and despite heroic efforts by first responders and bystanders to help Nick, he died from his injuries. The investigation shows that the operator was at fault, but Minnesota's careless driving statute does not apply to light rail operators. It applies to vehicles, which excludes devices used exclusively upon stationary rails or tracks, according to our statutes. Because of the statute, the operator could not be and was not charged with any crime, not even a misdemeanor of careless driving. If he were driving a Metro Transit bus, he could have been charged with careless driving. This bill would simply make the reckless and careless driving statutes apply to light rail operators. It closes a gap in current law. If passed, the operator who caused this accident cannot be charged. But I believe, and Nick's family believes, that we need to change this law. Hopefully some good can come of this senseless tragedy. Beyond this simple bill to close this loophole, the accident revealed a few other safety concerns the legislature may want to address in the future, and I'm committed to do so. It is my hope that we keep this bill very focused on this simple correction that is before us today, so that can we have it pass this session without getting it caught up in more complicated issues. Mr. Chair, I have two members of Nick's family that are here today to speak, both Peter and Seth Westlake, Nick's brothers.
Please welcome to our committee and give us your name and your testimonies.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, committee, for letting us speak. I'm Peter Westlake. I am Nick's brother. You know, we lost a piece of our family that day, and the Minnesota community lost a shining star. They lost a beautiful ballroom dancer. He was not only a great dancer, but he also helped produce this publication for local dancers. He was a wonderful programmer. He was a generous volunteer with his time. And then that night in July, you know, this light rail passed through a stop signal, passed red taillights of the parallel traffic, active cross traffic, and, you know, struck my brother and killed him. But one of the most challenging and perplexing conversations we had to have was with the district attorney, where he sat down and said, you know, all indications are that this guy ran a stop signal illegally, and but because he's driving a light rail and not a car or a truck or a bus, there's nothing we can do. And so, and we had to walk out of that room, you know, completely lost. So this bill, we're hoping we'll solve that one loophole. It will be a simple, straightforward, modest bill that can hopefully fix this one hole and make sure that another family doesn't have to have that conversation. And we're hoping that you know, we do understand that this is not going to have any impact on our case, and nothing will happen to this driver. But we hope that it can be a way to keep the memory of Nick alive and to know that our streets are safer, that Minnesota is a safer place because Nick was here. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter. Okay. Welcome, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Seth Westlake. I am Nick's younger brother, and thank you to the committee for listening to us today. Nick was an important part of my first years in Minnesota. He was an overwhelmingly supportive and positive figure in my life, and he has been responsible for teaching me so many of the marketable skills I have today. Losing a brother, one of my best friends, and such a valuable member of the Twin Cities community in such a tragic accident is something I could never wish upon anyone else. And we're here today because we'd like to see a change in Minnesota law that might make the light rail system that much safer for other families and members of the community, and to see that the light rail traffic is held to at least the same standard as a car, bus, or other vehicle. Like Nick, I've been a big supporter of light rail public transportation. I've taken the train countless times to and from the University of Minnesota campus, where tens of thousands of students cross the tracks every day on foot. And it's upsetting to me to think that a 150-ton train can miss a signal, potentially hurt someone, and that there would be essentially zero consequences. If Nick had been the one to survive, he would have been here today. Unfortunately, that's not the case. We'd like to try and make Minnesota and the light rail system a little bit safer. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Seth, and thank you, Peter. I'm sure I express the entire committee's sincere and heartfelt condolences for the loss of your beloved family member. And we acknowledge for the loss of a beloved Minnesotan as well. We are honored by your act of love in being here as activists to ensure that this tragedy will not happen again, or at least be minimized so that other beloveds aren't lost to us. Thank you so much. Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Peter and Seth. And I echo the chair's comment. It's sorry for your loss, and I'm sorry that it took something like this for us to notice a flaw in a law that we had. And I especially want to take a moment to apologize to what you had to just sit through to get to this point where we could talk about this really important piece of legislation. So sometimes the things we do here aren't nice. They can be really ugly, but sometimes that's the process of how we get through stuff. And so as you go through your journey of grieving your brother, know that we'll continue to work to try to make sure that things like this don't happen again to other future families in the state of Minnesota.
Thank you, Chairman. Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Chair. I echo what Representative Dean says. I am sorry about what you had to witness here. And I'm sorry about your brother's loss. You know, policies that we create here oftentimes have tragedy attached to them. And so I thank you for it sounds like one of you flew in, but being here and telling his story, because he will save lives. And so know that his memory is a blessing.
Well said. Is there anyone else that wishes to testify on this bill? If not, then Representative Ellison renews her. I'm sorry, Chairwoman Joachim, you get the last word.
Thank you. I just want to say thank you. This is a straightforward bill that would make reckless and careless driving statutes apply to light rail operators the same as it does for their colleagues that drive buses. If passed, the operator who caused this accident couldn't be charged, but we all believe here that that this law needs to be changed. I recently read stories about Nick and his friends in this beautiful magazine that his family and friends shared about his spirit, his love for dance, as well as his love for family and friends. He was a beautiful soul who left this world way too soon, and hopefully some good can come of the senseless tragedy of his death. And I ask for your support for House File 1568, and hope it can move straight to the floor.
Thank you, Chairwoman. Thank you for bringing us this bill. And I apologize to you. I missed that someone else had something else to say.
I'm fine.
Lead Johnson, please.
Chair Mariani, Representative Yucatim. I want to thank you for bringing this forward. It's something we need to do, and hopefully that we can get this done. I unfortunately have witnessed a vehicle get struck by a train, and it was actually recorded with my squad car, and using that video in training exercises now.
Thank you, Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, I forgot. Is it appropriate? Can I ask for a roll call vote on this bill?
If there are member wishes to offer,
I can. Chair, I would like to request a roll call vote.
Representative Edelson calls for a roll call. With that, the clerk will take the roll. Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Edelson removes her motion that House File 1568, as amended, be sent to the General Register. Very well. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Mariani?
Yes.
Christensen?
Yes.
Considine?
Yes.
Dean?
Yes.
Edelson?
Yes.
Grossel?
Yes.
Howard?
Yes.
Johnson?
Yes.
Lesch?
Aye.
Long?
Yes.
Lucero? Lucero? Miller?
Yes.
Moeller?
Yes.
Nash? Nash? O'Neill?
Yes.
Pinto?
Yes.
Poston? Poston. And I'm going to go again. Lucero? Nash? Poston.
Out of all the 14 ayes and zero nays, House File 1568, as amended, is referred to the committee, on, or rather to the General Register.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chairwoman Joaquin. Thank you, Peter and Seth. Very well. With that, members, we are on House File 2405. Representative Hewitt. Hewitt. Sure. Oh, you do the same thing. I know. Yeah, I should know better. Do you mind moving?
Chair, I'd like to move House File 2405 to the General Register. Chair, I'd like to move House File 2405 to be laid over for possible inclusion.
Very well. Representative Edelson moves that House File 2405 be laid over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. And so, Representative Hewitt. I'm going to get this right. House File 2405 is before us.
Chairman Mariani and members of the committee, thank you for hearing 2405 today. This bill is essential to the operations of emergency medical services in the metro and all throughout the state. If you've ever been in a position as an EMT or a medic that has ran out of their protocols and don't know where else to turn, it's great that we have a place to call into to find out where we can go next. I don't know how many times in my own profession that I've had to do this and hear a friendly voice on the other end giving me direction so we can save another life. With this, this bill asks for $600,000 over the next biennium to $1.2 million over the biennium to go to two separate centers in the metro area here, one at Health Partners and the other one over at Hennepin County. There are two amendments to the bill.
Very well,
Mr.
Representative Dean, would you be so kind as to move the A1 amendment?
Mr. Chair, I'd move the 2405 A1 amendment.
And Representative Hewitt, if you could speak to your amendment briefly.
Yes, Mr. Chair. These really clean up the initial bill. The one is basically just making it a direct appropriation to the Emergency Medical Regulatory Board to be the fiscal agent on this for the state. And then the other one is to basically it determines the amount that the MSRB can take, which is 5%.
Very well. Members, will vote on the A1 amendment, and then we'll have a motion for the A2 amendment. And essentially, this puts the bill in the shape that the author wishes it to be. All in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. House File 2405 is amended with the A1 amendment. Representative Dean, would you move the A2 amendment?
Mr. Chair, just to let you know, the Gophers won today, if you're paying attention. I'll move the A2 amendment.
and Chair Dean, it means I'm doing really good in my bracket so far. So.
Okay.
Representative Johnson, on the A2 amendment.
On the A2 amendment, Mr. Chair Mariani, for the members, just so you know, over that 5%, that is actually $60,000 for administering this grant.
Very well. We can speak more to that once we adopt the author's amendment, or what essentially is the author's amendment. All in favor of the A2 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion barely prevails. The decision at 2405 is amended before us, and you may want to speak a little bit about those administrative costs.
Yes, Mr. Chair, and Representative Dean took away the show already in announcing what I wanted to make everybody happy about. So, anyways, this was negotiated with the two healthcare facilities that are involved with this and the MSRB. So. Basically, all parties agree to this. I'm going to turn over the mic to Mr. McAlpin from the Ambulance Association. He can go into more detail about actually where this goes.
Very well. Welcome to the committee, Mr. McAlpin. Please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and members, Buck McAlpin here on behalf of the Minnesota Ambulance Association, the statewide trade association that works with all the ambulance services around the state. We were approached by Hennepin County and Regions Hospital Health Partners that oversees our two medical resource control centers in the state. The Hennepin County one goes back to the 70s, and the Regions EMS MRCC a few years after that. Representative Hewitt did a really nice job talking about the context of what they do, but they're really kind of the lifeline that controls our entire infrastructure around bed capacity. During emergencies, disasters, we all remember the bridge collapse with our new 800 megahertz radio system. This is the agency that anybody across the state can contact by phone or radio and communicate with. These two entities have absorbed lots of the cost over the years out of their general funds of their facilities, besides what comes out of the 911 user fee. So when they approached the Ambulance Association Legislative Committee, and we as an association decided we would get in front of this and help, we believed we could increase what they get currently, which is only $307,000 a year each out of the 911 user fee. Working with our friends at Public Safety, we figured out that that amount was capped of what we could access to that. So we appreciate the committee hearing this bill so late in session, but we thought it was pretty important to get forward and try to keep it moving. And we worked pretty close with the MRCCs about additional funding they would need to continue to do this. That at the time when their volume continues to ramp up about what we do. And not only disastrous stuff, but we look across the state, you all hear lots of legislation here around mental health issues, behavioral health. We have ambulance traveling all over the state and around the Midwest here, moving patients day to day. And they really do a nice job helping our ambulance industry, both volunteer and paid. 60%+ of our industry still volunteer. And as Rep. Hewitt testified to, lots of these folks that come from Bowabic may not know how to get to United Hospital. So they can get on the radio and call East Metro MRCC right down the street here at Regions and be able to talk about those resources and where capacities are. And most importantly, if something goes wrong in the ambulance and or the helicopters, they can use those centers as access to communicate with online physician medical control, which is available to every ambulance service in the state. So it's a really nice tool that we get to use. So I would open it up to questions, but this would be a general fund appropriation. So on the 911 user fee, Mr. Chair members, that has to go through public safety as a grant to the EMS board. On a general fund appropriation, this can go directly to the EMS regulatory board. To Rep. Johnson's question about a fee there to administer the grant.
Very well. Are there any questions? Representative Johnson.
Chair Mariani. Representative Hoyt, I like the idea. I've used, at one time I was on the ambulance personnel, I've used both East and West Metro, depending where we're going. But I learned one thing about the East Metro. They also cover part of Wisconsin. I'm just wondering if you've talked to anybody in Wisconsin about also assistance with this program. I hate seeing, otherwise, the taxpayers of Minnesota are doing something to help the taxpayers across in a different state. I want to make sure that we really support our citizens of this state and not use our tax dollars for another state. Also, you mentioned the 911 funding. Since the East Metro is also working in Wisconsin, maybe we need to have them get in touch with the Wisconsin legislature and get some of that funding to help that with that as well.
Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson, that's a fantastic idea, and I think we should work on that, as I don't like Green Bay either, and I'm from Hudson. But the point of the matter is that you also have to look at the other places in the state where we have, where our crews go into, like up in the Dakotas and down in Iowa. We use their medical controls in those situations. Fortunately, I've worked in an industry, in the air industry, so I flew all over the state, and there's a lot of cooperative deals that we have throughout the region, basically. But I think that's something I would love to visit as long as I stay in the legislature and look at how we can do some cooperative agreements with that. Because I agree, I think if there's a large volume, and yeah, we can look at that.
Very well. Any further questions? Is there anyone else that wishes to testify on House File 2405? If not, final word, Representative Hewitt.
Once again, committee, thank you for taking your time to hear this, and I would appreciate it being held over for consideration in your omnibus. Thank you.
Very well. Thank you, Representative Hewitt, and thank you, Mr. McAlpin, for your testimony and also for your work. With that, the chair lays over 2405 as amended for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Members, Representative Pinto, House File 2395. And Representative Pinto, you have a layover motion as well.
I do, Mr. Chair. I move House File 2395 to be laid over for possible inclusion.
Very well. House File 2395 is formally before us. And Representative Pinto, I believe you have an amendment as well. Bless you.
Mr. Chair, I do. I would move the A1 author's amendment.
And Representative Pinto, this puts the bill in the shape that you wish.
It does. It does so, Mr. Chair.
Very well. Members, all in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. House File 2395, as amended, is before us.
Mr. Chair, I'll begin describing the bill. With your permission?
Please, yes.
Okay, I may have said that, I'm sorry. Members, House File 2395 makes some changes to licensing requirements for firefighters. As I'm not an expert on licensing requirements for firefighters, I'm going to turn things over to my testifier. He can describe some of the changes and where the bill's at, and we can go from there. My understanding is that it's more of a technical bill, and I guess we'll find out if folks have any concerns. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Very well. Welcome to the committee, sir. Please give us your name and testimony.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Steve Flaherty. I'm the executive director with the Minnesota Board of Fire Training and Education. And as Representative Pinto mentioned, this is mainly technical in nature. It does have the support of the fire service and the Board of Firefighter Training and Education. A lot of this has to do with consistency in definitions of fire departments, firefighters, defining processes as to license applications and renewals for firefighters, and better defines the process on how the board receives its funding from the fire safety account to provide reimbursements back to those 775 fire departments of Minnesota.
Very well. Are there any questions for Mr.
Flaherty?
Mr. Flaherty, Representative Johnson.
Chair Mariani, Representative Pinto. I was going through this, and one of the issues that we do have, actually all across the state, Minnesota is mostly a volunteer fire department state. Something like 90% of our departments and our firefighters are all volunteer. I'm concerned about it because there's a severe shortage of volunteer firefighters all across the state. You can't drive into any town without seeing a sign, firefighters wanted. Is this going to make it more difficult or easier with this bill to get the firefighters in the field and up and running? Because we're all across the state, we're shorthanded.
Mr. Flaherty.
Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson, actually what this part of this technical language does is it makes it easier, more inclusive, if you will, for firefighters who want to get licensed by allowing for not only just IFSAC certification requirements as is currently in statute, but it's also allowing for other accredited certifications such as parole board or members of the military that are coming back to come and serve as firefighters if they want to get licensed. So that will this language will allow for that more inclusivity.
Very well. Are there any further questions? Is there anyone else that wishes to testify on House File 2395? If not, then Representative Considine.
Thank you, Chair Mayor. I just want to thank Representative Pinto. As Representative Johnson pointed out, a large number of ours are volunteers, but I particularly like the training aspects of it because it's not your same old fires that you saw even 20, 30 years ago. They're far more complex. In Mankato, we have a core group that offers support for, I think, a 9-county area. Yeah, things have changed. They've become a lot more complicated. Like the bill a lot. Thank you.
Good observation. Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just kind of the other half of Representative Johnson's question, and Representative Considine kind of touched on this. One of the things that detracts people from our volunteer fire departments in rural Minnesota is the requirements of training after they become a firefighter. And certainly we want them to be properly trained, but just the nature of it, the time it takes, the cost, all these different things are really discouraging people. Yeah, I can bring this in about EMS also, to be honest, but that's really out by me. That's the challenge. It isn't necessarily someone showing interest, but it's when they look at what the requirements are, then it really becomes, it's a labor of love to begin with, but then it becomes that's the only reason. And I think that's one reason why we're having difficulty. So does this address at all, kind of either changes that help or at least changes that don't make it worse, some of those issues that we face with our small volunteer fire departments out in greater Minnesota?
Mr. Flaherty.
Mr. Chair, Representative Miller, it really doesn't address the requirements for training as much as it specifies, consistency in what's available and what the board reimburses for training. A lot of this is licensing, and keep in mind that the career firefighters are required by statute to be licensed, and the volunteers and paid on call, which Representative Johnson said, I agree, it's about 93% of the fire services paid on call or volunteer. Those folks, those firefighters have the option to license, so it's not a requirement, but it is for career.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Miller. With that, Representative Pinto, any last words before we move the latest over?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did want to note, in case it wasn't clear, that my understanding is volunteer firefighters are not required to be licensed, and we continue not to be. So just in terms of clarifying that, with that, thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Very well. Then the Chair lays House File 2395 as amended over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill.
Thank
and thank you, Mr. Flaherty, for being with us here today and for your work in shaping this proposal before us.
Thank you.
Members, then we're to our last bill, which is Representative O'Neill, House File 1589. And Representative O'Neill, I believe your motion is to lay over as well. And I think you have amendments as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, that is my motion. And I do have an amendment. And I just want to speak to that very quickly. The bill was posted about 6 minutes or so before the 24-hour deadline for amendments, so I do apologize. I tried to get an amendment drafted very quickly, and there were concerns that the Department of Public Safety had, and so it took a little bit of time, a couple hours, to finalize what we wanted to accomplish. And so the amendment, I think I sent it around 4, so I apologize for the lateness, but it was as fast as I could go, Mr. Chair. These do address the concerns from public safety, and you probably have been made aware of that. I don't know if they're here to testify to those concerns, but in short, the amendment takes out provisions, one, that they cannot accomplish because MNLARS can't track that information. That would be the majority of what's being deleted out of Section 2. And then they had concerns also with being able to accommodate the changes in Sections 3, 4, and 5. They just felt that they weren't able to to accommodate that and accomplish that. So if you'd like, they could speak to that. Otherwise, I'll just move the amendment.
Representative O'Neill moves the A2 amendment, and I want to thank you, Representative O'Neill, for staying and working closely with our staff to squeeze this amendment in. That's certainly a lot better, members, than just having an amendment show up and no communication with staff. So thank you for working closely with my office to get that in. Representative Dean.
So, Mr. Chair, just to be clear, we're waiving the deadline for this amendment?
Okay. So, Representative Dean, my understanding is that we're waiving it because it has to do with us posting it slightly under 24 hours ahead of time. And that, given the closeness of communication, felt a lot different than just someone walking in with an amendment for us to post. So it has a lot to do with our processing on our end combined with the rush to get this amendment in. Okay. So Chair Dean, we're just making an exception here. I'm certainly not attempting to set a precedent for getting amendments in late.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate that. I just know that we've had lengthy discussions in this committee in the past about bills not meeting or amendments not meeting the deadline. So I know that we should have some flexibility, but I also think that it needs to be clear to all members that we need to have understanding too. And sometimes we seem to lose that understanding when we ask to change some of our rules because of certain situations. So I'm not objecting to this. I just want to make it clear that, you know, there are times things come up, and I think the understanding piece is important for all of us as we think about some of this procedural stuff that we can get really, really caught up on.
Thank you, Chair Dean. Representative Johnson.
Chair Mariani, Representative Dean, I agree with you on a lot of that stuff. But we also have a rule that the stuff is supposed to be posted 3 days in advance, not 6 hours or 6 minutes before the deadline as well.
So this was posted, and Representative O'Neill moves adoption of the A2 amendment. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. House File 1589 as amended as before. It's Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for your understanding. I did the amendment as quickly as I could, addressing concerns from the department. And when they told me Minlars cannot accomplish what we were asking of them, it was a pretty easy delete, and that's where the amendment came from. And they are here if you would like to hear from them as well. To the bill itself as amended, House File 1589 does two major things. What it does is it mandates ignition interlock after the second DWI offense. The second thing that it does, and we'll go into more detail in a minute, if you have a qualifying offense in another state, it is now a qualifying offense here in Minnesota. And that's important as we get into some of the details of the bill. But I have a testifier here, and I'm going to let him speak to some of the details of how long on ignition interlock and what are the qualifying offenses.
You're welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you, Chairman Mariani, members of the committee. My name is Ed Cohen. I'm one of the co-owners of Smart Start Minnesota, the only Minnesota-owned ignition interlock company. I'm here to testify in favor of Representative O'Neill's House File 1589. This amended bill will require that drivers who get a second DUI in 10 years or a third offense in a lifetime will be required to complete the ignition interlock program before being relicensed. The issue that this bill addresses is the fact that today drivers who receive a second offense within 10 years or a third in a lifetime can simply wait out their license revocation. In 2016, the Office of Traffic Safety commissioned a study to review and analyze the Minnesota Ignition Interlock Program. In the results of that study, it was learned that the participation rates for revoked drivers who fall into this category, namely those who have a second offense in 10 years or a third in a lifetime, was only 14.5%. 85% of the drivers who needed to have ignition interlock in order to drive legally are not entering the ignition interlock program. And according to Mothers Against Drunk Driving, up to 75% of those revoked drivers continue to drive illegally, frequently without insurance, and with nothing stopping them from drinking and driving. The ignition interlock program works, and it makes an impact in reducing drunk driving. According to the state study, drivers with ignition interlock on their vehicles were stopped from committing DUI offenses, meaning a test result over 0.08 over 12,000 times during the course of the study. And again, according to the state study, recidivism rates for participants in the ignition interlock program were less than half of that of individuals who did not participate in the ignition interlock program. Under current law, drivers who have 3 DUI offenses in 10 years or 4 DUI offenses or more total are required to complete the ignition interlock program. This bill would simply extend that requirement to second-time offenders within 10 or 3rd DUIs in a lifetime and require those offenders to complete the ignition interlock program as well. This bill was passed by this body last year and was an unfortunate victim of the governor's veto. I want to thank you for your time to hear this bill and would ask that this bill be laid over for inclusion.
Representative O'Neill. Thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. Cohen or for Representative O'Neill? Representative Mulder.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks, Representative O'Neill, for bringing this bill. I do like it. I just wanted to make a comment about ignition interlock, though. I do have a constituent who is currently on the program, not yours, and I think, Mr. Cohen, we spoke about this at 1.2. He's with a different manufacturer, and he did indicate that he's had a number of breakdowns with his car, and he's had to have his battery replaced multiple times, and I did see that your bill, I think you're going to that. I did see that your bill has some language about that, that the company would have to pay for any damage caused by the device. And so I appreciated that piece being in there and just wanted to make a comment about that. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Mulder. Are there other questions or comments? Is there anyone else that wishes to testify on House File 1589? If not, then Representative O'Neill, you can take up to 10 minutes.
Well, Mr. Chair, if I might, my county sheriff is here in the audience, and I just wanted to acknowledge that we have a new sheriff in town. You like to say it, right, County? I don't know if you want to come up and say hello or talk about DWIs and ignition interlock if you'd like to testify.
You're a much more popular right. Sheriff now.
Thank you for being with us, Sheriff.
With that, I know that this is a good safety measure, and it would be wonderful if we got the participation rate above 14.5%. I think this will actually save lives, which is why it's before you today. And I do appreciate Representative Mueller's pointing out the fact that if there is an issue with it, that the company will take care of that. And that language is found on page 9, paragraph 3. So that is also a consideration and still in the bill. And with that, I think there's a question, Mr. Chair.
Representative Johnson.
Representative Mariani, Representative O'Neill, I want to thank you for bringing this forward. I wish it would have been taken care of last year, and I appreciate all the work you did working on getting that issue about the damage. It was a lot of work last year to get that taken care of.
Very well. With that, then, the Chair lays over House File 1589 as amended for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. Members, we've come to the end of today's hearing. There will not be a hearing on Tuesday, yes, on Tuesday or Wednesday. On Thursday, though, there'll be a hearing. We'll take up some bills at that time. And with that, members, this committee stands adjourned.